There's chauffeurs, Teamsters, Mr. Lohman.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jeffrey Lohman, the attorney for the appellant Teamsters Local 414. This case originated as an action by the appellee Perfection Bakeries to vacate an arbitration award in favor of the union on the grounds that it did not draw its essence from the collective bargaining agreement between the parties. During the course of that litigation and prior to the court's judgment, the union filed a motion for attorney's fees it had expended in defending against the lawsuit. That motion was based upon both Rule 11 of the federal rules and the court's general authority to award attorney's fees where litigation is groundless or frivolous. The district court ultimately granted summary judgment to the union on the merits but not denied the motion for fees. The sole issue presented by this case is whether the district court abused its discretion by denying the union's request for its award of attorney's fees. The union requests that this court reverse the decision of the district court and remand the matter to the district court for a determination regarding the proper amount of those fees. The district court abused its discretion for two reasons. First, the district court's conclusion that Perfection's lawsuit could not fairly be regarded as frivolous or vexatious, and therefore that it was not in bad faith, is clearly erroneous. Second, the district court erred by failing to address the union's argument for fees under the objective reasonable person standard of Rule 11. By neither addressing the Rule 11 argument nor providing any explanation of its grounds for concluding that the lawsuit couldn't fairly be regarded as frivolous or vexatious, the district court has made meaningful appellate review difficult. The dispute that led to the arbitration award in this case arose out of a lockout of route sales drivers by Perfection, which subsequently became a strike and resulted in picketing. Now there's more than one bargaining.
Does the bargaining agreement itself have any provision for awards of attorney's fees?
It does not, Your Honor.
A lot of contracts provide that the loser pays the winner's fees, and if this contract doesn't, why should we effectively turn it into something that does?
Because the issue is more than contractual, Your Honor. The issue here is about the district court protecting its docket, protecting against frivolous and groundless litigation in its docket, and the specifically Rule 11 of the federal rules, which provides a remedy. In this particular instance, Your Honor, the arbitrator issued a decision finding in favor of the union and finding that the employer had violated Article 3 of the contract, which prohibits lockouts of employees. The company at the arbitration hearing had argued, in addition to Article 3, that its actions were justified by Articles 8 and 17 of the agreement. The arbitrator, in his 9-page decision, cited both of those provisions, but he didn't discuss those provisions. He didn't indicate why those didn't support the company's position. Rather, he simply said that the company's conduct violates Article 3 of the collective bargaining agreement. The district court's finding that Perfection's lawsuit was neither frivolous nor vexatious is clearly erroneous because the record reflects, including the district court's own motion or order on summary judgment, that Perfection had no prospect of prevailing in this litigation from the outset. The district court found that Perfection's position was contrary to both circuit and Supreme Court precedent. It also found that there was simply no evidence that the arbitrator had substituted his judgment for the contract. In order to prevail in its lawsuit under the longstanding precedent of this circuit, Perfection was required to demonstrate that the arbitrator had unambiguously based his award on some thought, feeling, or policy that fell outside the collective bargaining agreement. Courts may not and will not review decisions on the merits. That's well established. Even grave factual errors or serious mistakes of law will not result in vacation of awards.
Well, that's our position, but there are cases in other circuits, that probably some in ours too, that suggest a broader review. So it's not frivolous to rely on cases in another circuit, right?
Well, it's not frivolous to rely on cases from another circuit where they don't conflict with cases from this particular
circuit.
Well, but
don't you have a right to try to change the law?
You do, Your Honor, but the record in this case reflects that they were not seeking to change the law. There was never an argument made that these cases are better than the Seventh Circuit's rule. In fact, Chicago Typographical wasn't cited at all by the other side until their response to the union's own motion for summary judgment.
And so what did they say in their response?
They said in their response they tried to factually distinguish Chicago Typographical from the facts of their case, Your Honor. But the evidence indicates that the arbitrator relied on Article 3 of the contract, that he based his decision on Article 3 of the contract. The district court specifically found that there was no evidence of him substituting his judgment for what was contained in the contract. Because there was a clear interpretive route to the award, specifically the language of Article 3, the district court had no choice but to not deny Perfection's complaint to vacate. Perfection acknowledged in its various briefs on summary judgment that the arbitrator had relied on the contract, specifically Article 3. Perfection acknowledged that the arbitrator was aware of Articles 8 and 17. Perfection didn't allege that there was no possible interpretive route to this particular award. In essence, Perfection's argument can be in favor of vacation was that because the arbitrator's decision was poorly written, because it didn't discuss Articles 8 and 17, that the arbitrator must not have been basing his decision on the company's interpretation. But in this circuit, specifically Chicago Typographical number 16, poorly written decisions aren't a basis for vacating an arbitrator's award unless there's additional evidence to indicate that the arbitrator was basing his decision on some body or policy or thought outside the collective bargaining agreement. In Chicago Typographical, the court rejected the proposition that Perfection relied on in the lower court, which is that the fact that the arbitrator doesn't discuss these other contractual provisions is enough to infer a non-contractual basis. And indeed, one can read those decisions from outside the circuit for that proposition, although I note there were dissenting opinions in both of the cases from the Eighth Circuit, and that in Chicago Typographical itself, this court distinguished one of those decisions from the Eighth Circuit, the George Hormel decision. But in Chicago Typographical, the court stated that there's a good reason, of course, for not requiring arbitrators to write well-reasoned, well-written decisions, because to do so would deter them from writing decisions at all. On their face, the decisions from outside the circuit aren't applicable. I think certain of them are factually distinguishable, as noted, particularly the Boise Cascade decision, where in addition to there not being a discussion of these other relevant contractual provisions, the court also found that there were additional indications that the court had based its decision on some body or some feeling outside the collective bargaining agreement. And here the district court found there was no such evidence. The only evidence in the record that could possibly support the idea that the collective bargaining or that the award didn't draw its essence from the collective bargaining agreement was this failure to discuss these other contractual provisions. And Chicago Typographical says that's not enough.
How did you place your Rule 11 motion before the court?
It's in the appendix. There is the actual motion itself, which indicates that it was grounded both upon Rule 11 and the court's general authority.
Meeting the requirements of Rule 11 itself, that is, a separate filing and time and so forth?
That is correct. Those procedures were followed, Your Honor. With respect to the other issue, the court didn't explain its basis, and I see, Your Honors, I've run into my rebuttal time, so I'll
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lohman. Mr. Barnard?
May it please the court, my name is Larry Barnard and I represent the Appalee Perfection Bakeries. The issue before the court in this case is whether the district court abused its discretion in denying the union's request for attorney's fees. In its order, the court concluded that although this court has rejected Perfection's position, upon a review of the arguments, the court does not think it can be fairly regarded as frivolous or vexatious and accordingly shall deny the union's request for fees. Because reasonable men could differ as to the propriety of the district court's refusal to award the fees in this case, there was no abuse of discretion and the district court's denial of the union's request for fees should be affirmed. In the district court, Perfection based its argument on cases from the 8th and Circuit Court of Appeals and the 4th Circuit of Court of Appeals, which has held that when an arbitrator fails to discuss a probative contract term and at the same time offers no clear basis for how he construed the contract to reach his decision without such consideration, then there arises the probability that the award was not based on the contract. These cases were cited by us, by Perfection, to the district court in support of our motion for summary judgment in opposition to the motion for summary judgment filed by the union in this case. One of those cases, the Clinchfield Coal case, the Fourth Circuit specifically held that to the extent an arbitrator's award did not include a discussion of a critical contract terminology which could reasonably require the opposite result, the award could not be considered to draw its essence from the contract. It was Perfection's position in the district court that in this case, as in Clinchfield Coal, the arbitrator failed to discuss and interpret critical contract terminology, Article 17 and Article 8 of the Collective Bargaining Agreement, which could and would require an opposite result. The Article 17 was the guaranteed workday and workweek provision, which contained clear and unequivocal exceptions to the requirement that the employer provide a guaranteed workweek or workday to the union employees for certain enumerated circumstances, including labor disputes. In this case, the arbitrator's award demonstrates that it's undisputed that there was a labor dispute, that there were striking route sales drivers who picketed various Perfection facilities, and the employees at issue in this case, the mechanics and transport drivers, refused to cross those picket lines. Second, under the Article 8 of the Collective Bargaining Agreement, the Management Rights Clause, Perfection was authorized to relieve employees from duty because of lack of work or other legitimate reason. Perfection argued to the district court that it was reasonable for it to believe that the pickets would return and that the mechanics and drivers would refuse to cross the picket line during the critical Christmas week sales, and that absent assurances by the union that the pickets would not recommence or that the employees would cross the picket line without threat of union fine, as the arbitrator noted, Perfection was between a rock and a hard place. And so it was reasonable under Article 8 to relieve the transport drivers and the mechanics of their duty during this time period. Accordingly, under the case law of both the 8th and the 4th Circuit, Perfection had a meritorious argument that the arbitrator did not draw the essence of his award from the collective bargaining agreement. It could hardly be said to be frivolous that for Perfection to base its argument on the decisions of not one but two federal court of appeals who have reached the same conclusion. The fact that the district court disagreed with Perfection's argument does not render it frivolous or sanctionable under Rule 11. In fact, despite counsel's contention to the contrary, there's no Seventh Circuit case law that has expressly rejected the cases relied upon by Perfection in this case. Admittedly, in the Chicago Typographical Union, this court distinguished the facts of the George A. Hoare Mill case, and the court did note, and what I would call dicta if Your Honor wasn't sitting here, right here in front of me, that you thought you agreed more with the dissent in that case than you did with the the majority opinion. Nevertheless, the other cases cited, the Clinchfield Coal case, the Boise Cascade case, have never been expressly rejected by this court. Perfection argued to the district court that the Chicago Typographical Union case was distinguishable from this case. In Chicago Typographical Union, this court concluded that the award drew its essence from the contract for one reason, among others, that because the arbitrator specifically found that the disputed provision was inapplicable. In this case, we have no such finding by the arbitrator. The arbitrator simply says, relevant contract provisions, unless Article 3, Article 4, Article 8, Article 17. And then he goes on to say nothing about how he reached his conclusion that the refusal to allow these employees to work violated the lockout clause without ever addressing why the employer didn't have the right under Article 8, the Management's Rights Clause, or why the employer wasn't permitted to do so under Article 17, which clearly excluded from the guaranteed workday and workweek provisions labor disputes. It was for these reasons that Perfection argued in the district court that the award of the arbitrator did not draw its essence from the collective bargaining agreement. That was, as the district court found, that argument was not frivolous. There is a decision of this court in Brunt versus Services Employee Union that's held that although an employee's claims were barred by existing precedent, a district court did not abuse its discretion in denying sanction where the employees attempted to distinguish their case from the existing case law. That's precisely what occurred in this instance. This court has, on numerous occasions, affirmed a district court's refusal to grant sanctions in a case involving the vacation of an arbitration award, even in circumstances where affirmed a refusal to vacate the award. With respect to the union's Rule 11 argument, the union concedes in its brief that Rule 11 does not compel a district court to award sanctions to a prevailing party in every case where the claims advanced by the losing party are barred by existing precedent. If the losing party makes a legitimate effort to distinguish the precedent and advances legitimate arguments in support of its position, then the district court may properly refuse to grant sanctions. That's precisely what occurred in this case. Finally, we call the court's attention to the decision of this court in Independent Lift Truck Builders Union, where this court rejected an argument closely analogous to that being made by the union in this case. In that case, the appellant argued that the district court had employed an erroneous legal standard under Rule 11, and its decision was too conclusory. The language of the district court's order in Independent Lift Truck Builders is quite similar to that in this case, and this court rejected that argument and affirmed the refusal to grant sanctions. For these reasons, Your Honors, Perfection believes that this court should affirm the judgment of the district court refusing to grant attorney's fees or sanctions under Rule 11.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Barnard. Mr. Lohman, how much time does he have? 30 seconds.
I'll be 30 seconds brief, Your Honor. I'd just like to make one point, which is that the issue at the district court level was never whether Chicago typographical was the more appropriate rule versus the decisions from the other circuit courts. Perfection had not challenged the basis of Chicago typographical. It simply sought to distinguish it, and there was simply no way to distinguish that particular decision. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for argument, United States versus Garcia.